Lunch with Pippa Hudson. And now,
Consumer Talk, featuring Wendy Nola.
Who is with us from a studio in Durban again, and we're looking forward to having you back in the Cape next week, Wendy, but hello again, long distance.
Hello, Pippa. Yes, I'm looking forward to getting back too, but for now, yes, here I am in lovely, humid Durban. And we're talking annoying packaging or annoying design of products themselves. Speak to anybody and they'll have their pet peeves on the score. I know personally, so many times over the years, I've been dealing with a product that's just infuriating, and I've just imagined, just wished for a few minutes with a designer so that I could get them to interact with the beastly thing while I watch.
Yeah.
And then ask, what were you thinking? It doesn't work. It's just annoying. Fatal flaws in it. So for my list, and I hope you've been thinking about yours.
I have, and so have our listeners, I can tell you. There's a long list going here. Yeah.
Oh, good. So mine are taps which don't extend far enough into a basin so that you can barely fit your hands underneath the tap to wash them. So it's just too tight. Mm-hmm. I don't understand that at all. The children's toys, fortunately mine are grown up now, but children's toys which come attached to the packaging with 3,000 little twisties.
Yeah.
When the kids just desperate to get their hands on the Christmas or birthday gift, it's total overkill. I understand there need to be some, but it's a complete overkill in my view. Milk jugs and teapots in restaurants and cafes. I don't know if there's some sort of unwritten law that they all must leak when you pour, and there's some hidden camera that's creating some wonderful movie reel somewhere, but those leaky things have to go. Packets of sugar and flour that are impossible to open without spilling the contents.
Mm-hmm.
Toilet rolls with the end that are so well glued, so now it's your turn to open the toilet roll, for want of a better word, and you have to tear through a wasteful number of layers just to get it open and leave a mess all over the place. That's just for starters, but I think let's give you and some other people a chance.
Well, so you've stolen a few of mine, but so is somebody on the SMS line, because you've gone with one of my absolute pet peeves, the black bags that are so thin that they tear the minute you put anything sharper than the corner of a cereal box into them, and the cling wrap that doesn't tear along the perforations. It drives me nuts. I'm going to add a basin complaint. Wendy, I've got one that is designed so that when the stream of water reaches the basin, it's perfect. Designed to arc at 180 degrees straight out of the basin and onto your lap. My other pet peeve is the household detergent bottles, the likes of the bathroom spray and the kitchen cleaner, whose caps don't close properly. And
yes,
by the time you get home from the store, half of the product is leaked all over the back of your car. Another one of mine that I can't bear, and I know they're there for a good reason, the tamper evidence seals on products.
Yes, that came up a few times.
Break off, the little knobs break off before you've managed to open, or on the alternative, they're so difficult to break off, you need flipping industrial strength shears to get them off. I mean, we can go on and on and on, and this is not just going to be a moaning session, but we're talking here about products whose very design isn't fit for purpose, essentially, Wendy.
Exactly. And you, as I say, as I started saying, you wonder, how did this get approved? Who put the tick there and said, yes, perfect. Well, this is a go. Yes, let's put it on the market. It's quite fascinating. So, my whole sort of parade down this pet peeve path was sparked at, in the festive season, the silly season, when I was staying in my parents' home, and they'd, installed a new multi-plug, thinking, you know, it would meet all my needs of my various chargers and the Wi-Fi router and my laptop plug and all the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a mix of 3-prong and 2-prong sockets.
Yep.
And but they were too close together. So by the time I'd put in my 2 prongs, only one of the 3 prongs was usable and 2 of them were unusable because there wasn't enough space between those sockets. So once you put an actual plug in them, there was too much of an overlap. So I was just, it's bothered me for years, but on that particular occasion, I thought, oh no, why? So I took a picture and I posted it on Twitter, as one does, and it sparked quite a trail of other people saying, I've wanted this for years, exactly, drives me mad, blah, blah, blah. And so I thought it would be, Faisal Randery said this, and it's something that I've had in response as well, and that was, I once complained about that, the multi-plug that doesn't have enough space for all the plugs at game. I was told that if I use all the prongs, it will be overloading and can cause a spark. So my question was, what is the purpose of having so many sockets?
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for a reply. And I got several other replies from people about that. It's to avoid overloading, which doesn't make any sense to me, because then make a smaller plug.
What's exactly. If it can't support all of the sockets available, why have them?
Yes. Yeah. So I thought this week, let me get it from those in the know. That's the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications, NRCS. I wasn't sure that everybody would be back at work, but happily I was told that Patsy Andrews, who I believe might still be on leave, but she's made herself available to us today. She's the manager of the NRCS's office in Cape Town, and she's agreed to spread some light on this multi-plug story for us, and I hope she's on the line.
She is indeed, and Patsy, thank you so much for making time to speak to us, especially when you're on leave. We really appreciate it. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure.
Before we ask you about the plugs, I'm sure I'm not the only person going, I've never heard of the National Regulator for Compulsory Specifications. What does it actually do?
Okay, we have a national regulator that is responsible for the protection, safety and health of the consumers at the end of the day. We used to be part of the South African Bureau of Standards.
Okay.
You know, when we were one unit, that's we used to like write standards, test the products and then enforce it. And we moved out in 2008 because you can't be the referee, the goalkeeper and the player. So we're the enforcement side, and that's when the NRCS was established.
Okay, thanks for the explanation. Now let's get on to...
It's a very good one, I must say. I've never heard it put quite like that. Yeah.
So on to these multi-plugs. Is there any kind of regulation or recommendation stipulating how much space there should be between the sockets of a plug?
Just to explain to you, okay, we've got technical regulations. Your VC stands for verplicht and compulsory, and all the safety requirements for a specific product is inside the technical regulation, which then refers you to South African national standards.
Okay.
Like in this case, when you look at plugs, you will look at your SANS 164 range that you've got. Now, with the example that I've seen that you forwarded to us by email, I've seen that multiple plug adapter, it's got your normal two prongs and then also your normal South African, your 16 amp plug. Now, regarding the spacing between the sockets on the multiple plug adapter, the multiple plug adapter is designed for plugs with dimensions complying with the requirements of SANS 1645, normal two-pin plug without earthing, and SANS 1641, 16 amp three prong with earthing. Now, the problem comes in that you can't use all of those sockets is the design of the adapters and chargers which you use into the adapter become very bulky. Even though the pin configuration complies with the requirements, the size of the entire unit makes it difficult to utilize all the socket points. Yeah, I'm referring to the body of the charger being very large and overlapping on the sockets. So, yes, we are listening to your concern, but if you see, the regulator is mostly responsible most for safety and consumer protection. And if I listen to all the other concerns you had of the other products, those look like performance and quality.
Yeah.
Now, performance and quality, so safety always comes first. But you can, if there's a demand and a need, you can bring it to the attention of the SABS technical committee to say that's a frustration from the consumer, and then they will do a feasibility study to see, can they not make standards for quality and also for performance?
That's fascinating.
Okay. So I, for one, I'm going to send a recommendation through that there's a minimum amount of space left allowed between those sockets so that your large plugs, because there's from what, if I'm hearing you correctly, Patsy, there's no specification around the housing of the plug. The prongs, yes, but the plugs can be really big and bulky, and that's when you get the situation where there's that overlapping. So I'm certainly going to start the ball rolling. I'm going to send a recommendation through that yeah. becomes a specification, because in the meantime, I suppose we consumers must then just buyer beware, look at the multi-plug you're intending to buy and try and visualize whether the spacing is sufficient for your needs to allow you to use all the plugs that you're buying it for.
I would recommend that consumers need to firstly determine when purchasing a multi-plug adapter, what type of appliance you want to plug into that adapter. You know, if it's largely 16 amp or three-prong plugs, you must make buy one of those and then just a few of the 16 amp plugs to put in there. But on the other hand, also, you need to make sure that the spacing is correct for all of those to fit into it. But if the spacing is a problem, then what we can do, because remember, technology changes, things becomes larger. Now you get a plug with a USB. You know, there's always additional add-ons. The pins might comply, but the whole thing doesn't fit into that little plug. Then maybe we must make a recommendation for the spacings to be larger to accommodate larger adapters to plug in there.
Okay. I would love that.
Yeah.
And is there any, Patsy, is there any reason why all the hair products, your hair irons and your tongs and your hair dryers always come with the round two-prong that won't fit into the normal two-prong housing?
Look, if you look at the standards, we follow the standards because there's a technical committee that sits that sees what type of plug must be fitted to a product to make it safe for the end user. So there is recommendations of certain plugs. Like if you've got anything that works with water, it needs to be earthed. You can't use a plug that's not earthed for safety reasons. So in the specification, it's normally the two prongs are the double insulated and the one that almost looks like the lawnmower plug. You're speaking about that one, that the hair dryer plugs. Yes, that's for safety reasons, double insulated plugs. Yeah, that they're using.
Got it. Okay.
But there was a lot of research done to see which one is the most safe to use with an appliance.
Okay. We've actually got a caller on the line who has a question or comment that I think might be relevant while we've still got you on the line, Patsy. So let's say a quick hello to Martin on the West Coast. Nice to have you with us, Martin.
Good afternoon. I'd like to know why all the multi-plug have only got the entry cable on the one side. And we don't have an option of getting entry cables on the other side. And the second question is, if I've got a computer connection, you know, those three-pin flat plugs, why can't multi-plugs have those connections in? Then you can put the length of cable on that you want without having to buy a multi-plug with 1 meter or 5 meter cables if you want a different length cable. And you can make up your own cable.
Patsy, is what Martin is suggesting there reasonable or feasible and safe?
Okay, with regards to, I heard half of the question, there's a lot of questions in there, but what I could say is that, you know, to make up your own cable is a risk because not everybody knows how to connect cables. You know, it must be an electrician or specialized person to do that. What I would ask Martin maybe is if he can put his question for me by email, I'll give my email address, then I can give a formal response by referring back to the specification.
Okay, that's very kind of you. Patsy, what is your email address?
Okay, it would be my surname. It's andrewsp@nrcs.org.za.
andrewsp@nrcs.org.za. So, Martin, if you'd like to get a formal response, just do bear in mind that Patsy is still on leave, so allow a little bit of time for that reply, please. But please take advantage of that offer if you would like a full explanation. Wendy, before we say goodbye to Patsy, I think you had another question about the new standard of plug.
Yes, so in doing some research about the multi-plugs, etc., there came a lot of stories about the new South African plug, the Sans 1642 or the ZA plug. I wanted to know why when it became mandatory for new installations and where that leaves the old plugs that most of us still have in our appliances and the old plugs that most of us still have in our homes and businesses. Are those going to be phased out? Do we need to worry about having to replace them? What is the legality on that?
Okay, regarding that question, you're actually asking, is plugs under Sans 1641 banned to me, or are we going to phase them out? Okay, that's a normal three-prong 16-amp plug. The idea is to eventually phase them out. It may be a number of years, as it also affects equipment and appliance manufacturers. So the Sans 164 has become the preferred plug and socket configuration in the Sans 10142 wiring off premises. There was a publication to say Effective from January 2018, all socket outlet points for new electrical installation shall include at least one socket complying with the dimensions of fans 1642. So that's the new plug. Okay. So, but it also says there, socket outlets points may also include socket outlets complying with the dimensions of fans 1642. So the old plug is still permitted. The reason being, if you look at the wiring code, so the wiring of premises is valid when you erect a building. Now, all of those requirements is valid at that period. So we can't go back because the wiring code changes so often that when you erected the building and that was the time, then those requirements were applicable. So this requirement will applicable to all new buildings as of the time mentioned in this.
I think it was February 2018.
Yeah, January 2018. So, but it's difficult to phase it out because there's a lot of buildings and it was compliant to that regulation at that time. So going forward, all new ones, but it will take, look at the studies that they've done, it seems like it will take approximately 10 to 20 years to phase out.
So we don't have to panic.
No, you
don't have to panic about replacements. Okay, good. Okay. Thank you, Patsy.
Patsy Andrews, thank you so much for joining us, especially given that you were on leave. Patsy's the electrotechnical manager at NRCS Cape Town, the national regulator for compulsory specifications. And we'll talk after the news headlines about why it's so important that these products be designed properly, because when people misuse them or make a fix to try and get around the poor design, it can be very dangerous. We're going to tweet a photograph demonstrating that. We return to Consumer Talk, and still a little bit more conversation about products and product design and packaging design that drives you nuts. Before we move into the open line, Wendy Nola with us from a studio in Durban today. Lots of people upset about extension leads, Wendy, and the fact that they're being made too small. The whole purpose of needing an extension lead is to have a good length of cable.
A lot
of people saying they're only coming in half meter lengths now, so it does lend itself to the temptation to pile extension upon extension upon multi-plug upon multi-plug. And somebody sent us a photograph of exactly the kind of scenario you need to avoid here, of about five different multi-plugs plugged into each other because there's no space to use the one at the bottom because the way it was designed. And it's a fire risk, Wendy. It's something that we must emphasize.
Yes, it is. I'm no technical expert. I mean, I think we have the protection of trip switches in our mm-hmm. distribution boxes, I would like to think. But yes, there have been cases of fires from just this scenario. So yes, I mean, if you look at that, I haven't seen it. I'm going to have to go and look on Twitter myself. But it stands to reason that you're asking for trouble if you're doing that kind of chronic overloading. You need to change your plugs in the wall, first of all. I think too many buildings, your cheaper residential developments, were put up with far too few plug sockets in them, so thereby creating this sort of problem, just being really cheap on that sort of installation. And people, but the way we live today, when we do have electricity, we have a lot of need. We have a lot of more appliances than 25 years ago, just
That's
to keep
point.
Our to keep us online. If you think about the dongles and the Wi-Fi routers and everything that we have to keep charged in order to go about our business.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very good point. We've got Kurt on the line from Constantia on the subject of extension leads. Afternoon to you, Kurt.
How are you guys doing?
Yeah, well, thanks. And you?
Very good. I'll tell you exactly why those leads are getting shorter.
Okay.
And along with shorter, I don't know if you've noticed that they're getting thinner. And that's for two reasons. It's a consumer-driven thing where people are trying to, they want to spend less money. And so what they're doing is they're making those leads thinner. So the size of the wire is thinner, which means that you can't actually go much longer than what they give you. So the thicker the wire, the longer the lead can be, but then the more expensive the lead becomes. So the consumer is looking at buying a lead and he sees a lead for $100 and he buys it without checking that it's maybe only 3 meters when he needs a 30-meter lead, which needs to be thicker.
Okay, you sound like you work in the industry, Kurt.
We do. And then there's one other thing. Something in the old days, the old extension leads used to be rated at the same as the plug. So the extension lead used to be good for 16 amps, as she mentioned before.
Yes.
The new leads are only rated, and if you look at the fine print on it, they'll say they're only rated for 10 amps. So it's the fine print that you're missing.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, what does that mean for the person who doesn't notice that and wants to plug that 10-amp rated lead into a 16-amp plug? Excuse my ignorance, but what are the potential ramifications thereof?
I guess it's the other way around. If you're using an appliance which used to run on an old lead which was good for 16 amps, and you go and plug a lead which is only good for 10 amps in there, you run the risk of burning that lead out because it's only good for 10 amps.
So I'd love to put something on our blog about what to look out for when you're buying this sort of, and we all buy them. Maybe if you could leave your details with our producer, we could pick your brains a bit and put something together that would be useful for our listeners.
Happy to do so. Just one last comment, though, and it relates to the multi-plug issue. I think that our standards are lagging behind the products that are being manufactured. So as we get better and better, the products are using less and less power. So the need is for a thinner cable or for a smaller plug. And that's why your plug doesn't need to take 16 amps, because nothing that we use in a domestic environment is going to push as much power as what it used to before.
That's fascinating insight.
I did not know that.
Sure, what a useful call. Kurt, thank you so much for dialing
thank
in.
You,
and
Kurt.
I'm putting you back to my producer, Amy, to please capture your details and so we can connect you with Wendy off air so she can pick your brain a bit. But that's really fascinating insight and in layman's terms that I could understand. So thank you, Kurt,
yes,
for that
too.
Call. I mean, it's fascinating here, Wendy, what is irking people? And such an interesting insight from Quinton on Twitter, who says, do you remember when Sunlight Liquid reversed its packaging to have the cap underneath? I worked for Unilever at the time. The hate mail was unbelievable.
Yes.
And luckily someone up high agreed to reverse the decision and revert to the original design.
Commendably.
Yeah.
And there again, actually, I worked on that story. I was with Fair Lady at the time. In fact, it sparked a whole feature I did on packaging that I think I called Rap Rage. That started my interest in the packaging industry. It was that move. And
yes,
when I was investigating it, Unilever told me of all the extensive market research they'd done on this new, it was called the Tottle, where it had a pre-measured squirt.
That's right.
From that upside. And people had conspiracy theories about it because it was too much. And the theory was that Unilever just wanted you to use more of their product, et cetera, et cetera. And it leaked and it was a total disaster. But they claimed that there was, you know, very widespread acceptance of it. But the real market, decided otherwise. And commendably, they very quickly dispensed with that Tottle and brought back the old bottle, which we still have very much the same, except now it's made of 100% recycled
about
plastic.
Time too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they went back to the original. But yes, packaging is fascinating.
It really isn't. I mean, I'm just, my screen is overflowing with stories and people's peeves. And Vic, you've flagged one of mine as well that drives me nuts, particularly the rice packaging, which comes with a supposedly re-stickable label that you don't have to
never
use pegs on to keep. I mean, my pantry is full of stuff with pegs on top, keeping it closed. And as Vic points out, those restickable labels maybe stick one more use and then they're completely useless. So why bother in the first place? Elaine shares your frustration over those glued toilet rolls. Elaine is convinced it is actually deliberate to make you waste paper at the beginning of the roll. Somebody else pointing out earring butterflies that don't quite fit properly.
Oh,
and you
yes.
can't take those back because of hygiene reasons. All the women in the studio raising their thumbs in support of that one. Hotel room coffee sachets with too little coffee and so difficult to open, says another. And I think this came up in your Twitter feed, Wendy, the little milk cartons that are so
yes.
difficult to rip
Simon
open.
Simon Coleman, I so related. Anyone that stays in hotel rooms often will know about the mess that you inadvertently make trying to make your morning tea or coffee. And then one, I think it was I don't know if it kind of merged with my feed about these things or whether it was a separate one, but a week ago there was this very long, fascinating, hilarious thread about those hotel showers, the open showers that have they have a little bit of a glass sort of guard, but they don't go out far enough, so you flood the bathroom floor. And somebody commented, many people commented, that that has been a design idea cribbed from the European hotels where they actually do it properly and have the sloping floor and all the rest.
So the water
and
drains
here
away.
In many cases, the water drains away, and they also have heated floors or whatever. But here, it's just sort of your flat thing. And it, I've used many a hotel bathroom tile mopping up water from those open showers. And again, you think, did nobody in management or like actually stand and have a shower in here? It couldn't have happened.
Exactly.
And poor cleaning staff.
Exactly.
Well.
You have to deal with the mess every day. And you know, it happens. I've seen it in so many Airbnbs I've stayed in. And the infuriating thing is you've probably only got one small towel to start with, and you have to then use it to mop up the floor. So we
Very
relate.
Wasteful.
Okay. We've got to take a short breaker. We're going to continue with some of your packaging messages, but also happy to take some open line calls. Dial us now on 021-446-0567.
Consumer Talk. Open line.
Call 021-446-0567.
Can you please ask Wendy what we can do with Tetra Pak cartons? These are the ones that Long Life Milk, etc. come in, because they're made up of aluminium, cardboard and plastic. So how do we dispose of them? Thank you.
My pet packaging peeve, is that right? Yes, is the refills that you buy for cleaning products. You think you're being really smart because you are saving money and ostensibly saving the environment by not buying another plastic bottle, you're buying the sachet. But if you look really closely, a lot of those refill packets aren't recyclable. So you're not really scoring anything, and sometimes the bottles are. So I think that's really ridiculous, because the point of a refill seems to be reducing your impact on the environment and on your wallet. This is Catherine Durbanville.
Catherine, I know, Wendy, you mentioned that in a show last year, that refill issue.
Yes, a lot of consumers are shocked by that. So almost all of those refills are not recyclable at all. They end up in landfill, whereas if you're buying the bottle, it seems more wasteful, but they are, not only are they recyclable, they are being recycled, which is the most important thing. So if it's about your impact, then certainly, and in some cases the refill doesn't work out cheaper anyway. So in a lot of cases, your bottle, just buying the original, although it seems wasteful, is the better option. The first question was around Tetra Pak, which is a form of multi-layer that is being recycled. There are many products that are using recycled Tetra Pak. What the recycling industry will thank you for is if you spend a little time, you pull off the plastic opening, and you flatten it. You rinse it out in grey water, and you flatten it. So you unglue the edges, and it's a lovely flat pack, and that makes you a grade one gold star recycler.
Yeah, it's such an important one. This, it comes back to that issue of what is recyclable and what is actually being recycled. Some of these products, like the Tetra Pak, somebody has to separate the layers out effectively, don't they, at the end of the chain somewhere?
No, and some products, some recycling plants actually can put that into those plastic type benches. Something that's, I mean, it's not going to end up being a food, you know, some kind of food grade packaging or anything like that.
Yeah.
But your more industrial type uses, there are plants that can handle those multi layers. Yeah, but they're not at the top of the recycling tree, like PET, for example. But they are. Tetra Pak is most definitely being recycled.
Okay, so I'm smiling that there are two messages that have come through about caps, and I'm smiling because my husband happens to be in the business of producing closures, as they call them, so it's something I'm acutely aware of. And two people on separate issues. Henry's saying, why, oh, why do they fit plastic lids on glass or metal kettles? The lid starts crumbling after a year or less, dropping plastic dust into the water or into the cups when they're poured, and I'm convinced it might even be a health hazard. Similarly, Cynthia, it seems to be the coffee drink smokers who are feeling this acutely. Cynthia says, Thermos flasks. I use my flasks daily. They're stainless steel, good, expensive flasks made to last, but the lids are made of plastic and they corrode and break. Apart from drinking bits of plastic, it makes no sense making a plastic lid for a metal product. If this is the case, the flask should come with at least 5 replacements to last the lifetime of the flask. And I'm sure there are other people nodding in sympathy, and that's a fair point. Or you should be able to go and buy a replacement cup without much difficulty.
It's just cost. So the ones that are all metal obviously are a lot more expensive. But yes, it's – and of course nothing's going to come with more than a year or so's warranty. And the cup is only going to start disintegrating, the plastic one that is after that. So yes, it's a product that you would keep for many, many years unless you break it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make sense that a component should not last as long as the main body.
Absolutely.
Just a point on closures, please, for recyclers, is please – recycler's request is to, when you're putting your milk bottles and your cool drink bottles in for recycling, do it with the lids on.
Okay, that's interesting.
That's the request.
Okay, yeah. So you leave the lid on the bottle.
Yes, wash them out and then put the lid on the bottle. Yeah.
Okay, didn't know that, Wendy. Thanks for telling us. Other pet peeves on the SMS line, or I share this one, the tins of bully beef that you need to wind open, and half the time the windy thing breaks halfway through and you end up battling the bully beef to be able to make the quiche. I feel you on that one. I also feel Merle in the City Bowl, and I bet half of Cape Talk will be nodding their heads in response to this one. What about Elastoplast plasters? You cut your finger, you're all alone. It is so difficult to open the covering, pull a small string while you're bleeding everywhere. Totally relate
so
to
true.
That one. We've got another voice note. Let's take a listen to that.
Hi, Pippa. About the electricity subject and the cables and the plugs are 16 amp, and well, like the gentleman said, nowadays is the cables are 10 amp, and they come with a plug with 16 amp. I don't understand how that passes through the SABS, because I've got a lead, the plug says 16 amp, and the lead, like the gentleman says, the fine print says 10 amp. So I don't understand how that gets passed through SABS. All right, thanks. John, cheers.
That's interesting. So actually very sold windy. That way. I was going to say, I can understand if somebody bought a 10 amp lead having not read the fine print, plugging into a 16 amp appliance, you can understand. But that's an interesting point. It was sold with a 16 amp plug attached.
I'll have to ask Patsy about that.
Okay.
We can't not mention Zambuk in this segment. because that's the iconic pit. It's weird though, because it's something that South Africans love to moan about, but the product still sells amazingly well, and it keeps diversifying into other, that's the pink lip, because people were using it on their lips, and now there's a pink lip one, and I saw another variant in the store the other day. I can't think what it was. But in fact, in 2018, its maker, Bayer, posted a challenge on its Facebook page, struggling to open your Zambuk. Share a video of your struggle with opening the tin, # Zambuk challenge, and you could win R1,000. I think that is completely bizarre, but that is Zambuk. So I asked its maker, why is one of South Africa's most loved products still packaged in the country's most frustrating and user unfriendly way? Is Bayer reconsidering the tortuous tin or not? And the company's communications head, Tasneem Patel, responded, "While we acknowledge that the Zambuk tin can be challenging to open, our reasons for maintaining its iconic packaging has been made with a consumer in mind. It's not purely related to packaging. It is rather a holistic product decision. The tin is able to preserve the quality of the product, which ensures the integrity of the Zambuk that consumers have come to love and trust. Also, it can't accidentally open in pockets, that's for sure, bags, etc., which we have found to be a possibility with alternative packs. Unless you're that person that uses it often and is so sick of the struggle that you sort of don't close it properly and then it pops open in your bag and sludges the green and pink all over your whatever else you have in your bag, your wallet or whatever. As for whether they're going to relook at it, the product is... The product in its entirety is of utmost importance, and we believe that currently it's the best possible packaging, but we continue to investigate viable alternatives that we believe will protect the Zambuk that consumers have come to expect. And on reading that, I thought, but we have so many other
options,
effective medications, salves, etc., that come in user-friendly. You mean, is Bayer really suggesting that they're all compromising the product in some way? I think not. So it's an interesting one. But, you know, as I say, they seem to almost revel in the fact that it frustrates consumers that this tin has now, you know, people are
it's
posting
it's become sort of part of the brand story almost.
It's become its story, yes. Yeah. So, you
it's
know,
something I relate to because, you know, you're always balancing when you're talking about packaging, Wendy. You understand the packaging is there for a reason, to protect the product, to protect the integrity of what's inside it. So you can understand if something is a little difficult to get into, there may be a good reason for it. The child protective caps spring to mind. But on
great
the other
example,
end,
yes.
I sit here struggling with arthritic hands. I'm finding it increasingly difficult to open anything that's got a child safe cap on it, much to the mirth of my children. I have to go and ask my children to open things like the Listerine mouthwash and all of
yes,
those that
you've
require
got to grab and turn
grab and
at
squeeze
the same time.
And turn with yes. sort of pressure on both sides because I can't do it anymore. It's a real balancing act, and I feel for anybody like me who is getting older and struggling with the strength of the hands and has to still open those products. Like I say,
yes.
my children open the childproof caps for me. Anyway, Wendy, we could write a book based on the input we've had today. It's been a fun segment. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you back with us in Cape Town next week.
Studio, yes, me too. See you then.
And reminder, if you do want to reach out to Wendy, the email address is consumer@nola.co.za, spelled K-N-O-W-L-E-R, or contact her on her Facebook page, Wendy Nola Consumer.